Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there, and the wrong one died, and the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. He was Skimbleshanks on the 5th U.S. National Tour of Cats, so welcome, Felix Hess, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited. I do love talking about Skimble, and so it's always fun. But let's start at the beginning. What is your cat's history? Like, when did you see it first? What was your experience before you became a cat?
Cats has always been a part of my life. When I was a kid, it was the very first musical that I saw. I grew up just outside of Philadelphia, so I saw it at the Forest Theater in Philadelphia for the very first time. Actually had a interesting experience with my mom taking me, that we went to get a bite to eat before the show, and I didn't know there was a musical about it. She just introduced me to the book, Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. So I would just flip through the book and look at the Edward Gorey illustrations and just became obsessed with that. And then she let me know, there's a musical about this, right? And started listening to it, and it came to the Forest Theater, so she took me. And the bar next door, we went to get something to eat, and we noticed two guys with cat's duffel bags, and we were saying, do you think they're in the show? And the Rum Tum Tugger is my favorite, as it is everybody's favorite cat in the entire world. But we asked them, so are you in the, well, my mom had the bravery to ask. I was a little too shy at the moment to ask, are you guys in the show? Yeah, we're in the show. We're just on our way there now. Which cats do you play? The Rum Tum Tugger. And I died. I fell out. I was like, it's you. Oh my God. And so that was my first experience before even seeing the show. So I saw that when I was very young, and then just always the trajectory was towards doing it, towards being in it. The leg warmers, wearing the makeup, putting the hair on, doing the unitard, the lights, the sound, the magic was always the trajectory. So I was in college at the time. I decided to take a little bit of break from school because I was getting a little burnt out from doing too much. And was just auditioning, and it came up, and I auditioned for it, and I got it. They called me, and I went out on the road. I joined the cast in 2006.
Wow.
Is when I joined the tour, and then continued doing that for another 2 years solid as Skimble, understudying two roles, and then came back 2 more years after that, understudying many a role.
Yeah. So how old were you the first time you saw it? You said you were young.
Yeah. Probably 8 or 9, I would say.
Okay.
Around that age. Like, enough to kind of know, but not know.
Yeah. So enough to not fully understand. So that's always my question, because I've argued at length, I don't think that this is for children.
No, it's not.
And because I now know the story and like how absurdly dark it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I get the blissfulness of like, as your kid, you don't catch any of that stuff. You don't notice any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were like a huge fan as an 8-year-old,
mm-hmm.
when you then book it and you get told the backstory,
yeah,
did you kind of look back on that experience and say like, oh man, I never picked up any of that. It was just fun cats singing and dancing.
I think probably at that age, I knew there was something going on, something buzzing around in my body that was new and different, I guess is a way to say it. But there was definitely maybe that I was too young to put words in it, but there was definitely something that I guess I didn't know to think of it as sexual at the time, but there's definitely like a darkness, a sexuality to it, a ferocity, what is it called? Like an untamedness to this thing. Like there's something that I'm not supposed to be seeing, but I'm seeing it.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's kind of interesting you say that, because that's a lot of like cats are just, you're lucky to be there type yes. of like be like part of the show. Mm-hmm. But I definitely, as I started, because I didn't see it as a kid. Mm. I never saw, my first introduction was 2016.
Okay.
And it was just, I know this has been around forever. I should go
now
see
and
it.
Forever.
Yeah. I was like, I should go see it. And I had no idea what I was going to see. And so I didn't realize. And then I watch and there's kids everywhere and everything. I'm going, that looks like they're having sex on stage basically. Yeah. And that looks like an orgy. And yeah. I was like, and they're going to murder one of these cats to end the show. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is not the story. Mm-hmm. I, you know, there's Frozen and there's The Lion King and all these other shows that you can go see. And we're going to go see this one. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of always struggled with that. And the more I've like my whole, my knowledge base of the show is still just the plot. And when you mm-hmm. really break down the plot, it's not a kid's show.
No, it's not.
As NC-17 as you can get.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I think what it appeals to kids about, of course, the lights, the sound, the costume. And it's one of those shows that the more you dive into it and more you kind of know what's going on, it's why it's one of those shows people come back and see again and again. It's because you always see something different. And especially talking about Central Clump, which is the orgy in the ball, or electrocuting a cat as the finale, or just shooting one up into space at the end, you start to learn see those little things and start to connect the dots. That's what I think brings people back, especially as adults. But as kids, you just kind of see everything happening at once, and you know, you can't take that all in because it's so much.
Yeah. I want to make sure I highlight exactly what you just said there, because I know what that means now, because I've heard enough. I've talked to enough cast members, but you just said the word sensual clump.
Yes.
As in that is a part of the show.
That is a section in the ball. It is called sensual clump.
It's a section of the show. That blew my mind when I heard that the first time. That's it. This is a sensual clump. And mm-hmm. that is, yeah, and let's bring 8-year-olds to the show.
Yeah. Let's see them all move together and then throw their hands up.
Do you know who that tugger was? Did you ever get to interact with that tugger outside of that bar experience?
That's a good question. I actually should go look that up after we finish talking. I have to call my mom and remind myself when, like what year that actually was and look that up. I don't know his name, to be honest.
Okay.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So you book it basically during college, and yes. you end up doing 4 years, mm-hmm. mostly a Skimble, but who else did you cover?
My first 2 years, I understudied Monka Strap and Tugger. And then when I came back, I started understudying more roles. I started understudying Alonzo, and then Plato McCavity. And then out of necessity for the road, because, you know, people get injured out on the road, stuff like that, I started covering kittens. I've performed Mungo Jerry. I've done Pouncible. I've done Tumble Brutus. Who else? Basically all the cats except Deuteronomy and for Mistopheles. I actually had an opportunity, which was a once in a lifetime opportunity. I got to go on as Gus once. That it was chips are down, everybody's out, like get ready, put me in the fat suit and everything like that. And I actually got to go out and perform Gus one night, which was really a dream come true.
Wow. And yeah. did you win as Tugger too, I'm assuming, right?
And Tugger, yes. Yes. So you did Tugger many times.
Fulfill your dream, your 8-year-old dream, mm-hmm. and to go on as Tugger.
Yeah, my Mick Jagger fantasy. Clap, clap, feather, feather.
Exactly. So I love hearing a little bit about, like, with your tour. I've talked to a lot of the most recent tour. I've talked to a lot of the 2016. I've now talked to a lot of 1987. I've not talked to as many people from the fifth tour. Mm-hmm. What were you told? Like, what was the explanation of the story that you were told, especially like what is Skimble's story? Because I defend it. There's the three words that everyone always tells me about, but I'm curious to hear, because every production has a slight different take.
Mm-hmm. I never got the three words moment. I know what you're talking about though, but I got a postcard, not a postcard, but like a postcard that had a sentence on it that he is, he's a leader. He's an elder in the tribe. He is official on the midnight mail. railroad line. He's in charge. He likes to keep things neat and tidy and everything orderly and moving forward. And my impressions of him that I started to put in, especially in the song, if you start breaking down the lyrics, that he's a very world travel person. He kind of knows the ins and outs. He can see things before they're happening. So he's kind of your inside man always. He's always the guy with the VIP tickets. He's always the guy making sure you get in or don't get in or making sure the right people get in. Kind of like that. A hipster of the world, I guess, is a way you can,
look at it. Interesting. I find it fascinating because that's like the personality and persona. My Skimble episode, I kind of called him the creepy uncle. And I think that has definitely rubbed a few Skimbles wrong.
Of course.
But I am curious, what was like, how much do they tell you beyond that of like, this is a personality, this is more of the like, do they tell you at all about Kat's family tree or who's with who or who you should be like annoyed with or love or brother and sister with or any of that? Like how much of that is broken down for you?
Not the year that I did it, not very much. You're basically given the bullet points of the characters and, you know, like McCavity is bad and Grisabella's here and Monka Strap's the leader and Tugger's like the guy. And, you know, Skimble is the uncle that keeps things going and keeps things in charge. And kind of overextends himself a little too much. But in terms of creating relationships and stuff like that, the years that I did it was left a lot up to interpretation. We were told blocking-wise where to be, when to go, when, who you're with. So based on who you're with, because usually year to year you're with the same cats or kittens or whoever you're around in that moment, that you tend to build the same relationships, but each relationship between the actors becomes unique in its own way.
So I find that so fascinating as someone who's not a performer, not an actor, not involved in any of this stuff. How much do you then fill in the blanks? Cause you're given a little bit and then you've got to go out and do this performance every night. Mm-hmm. How much else do you add? And if so, like what did you add?
For me, just because it's a lot of body work in cats, obviously moving to create image, especially because you're so small and being a tiny orange dot running around the stage, you want people to know which one is which. So I started adapting certain mannerisms, especially thinking about like when a cat stands up, they wouldn't have their arms necessarily out to the side or so much over their head or reach behind them. Thinking of keeping my arms in because, you know, if you pick up a cat, it kind of brings its shoulder up and its arms kind of hang. It doesn't really have control of it. So when it stands up, I would keep my arms in and keep my hands nice and tidy and also kind of official, keeping them together. People would say it looked like I was always carrying around like a tiny gift box in my hand, where I'd keep my hands together and just be very proper and ready to go. Because being Skimble in the ball with the whole ritual of the evening, it's a ceremony. So his job is kind of to keep things going. So there's a joy in the familyness of being part of the Jellicles for Skimble, but there's also an officialness that's necessary. What other types of things? Just ways of standing up, ways of holding your hands, that I would keep my fingers in because cats don't have fingers, they have claws. So Suzanne Viverito, who is one of the assistants that helped teach me the show when I was first learning it, she explained to me, so when you have a cat, doesn't have fingers, they have claws. So whenever you have your fingers out, your claws are out. And a cat only has its claws out when it's defending itself. So make sure you make that choice. If your claws are out, if your fingers are out, that reads a different way versus keeping them in and keeping the paw scenario. So I found myself kind of keeping my hands in this kind of ape knuckle dragger type of situation where I'd keep the top half of my fingers in and even crawling around, keeping my paws in and keeping my claws in unless I needed them, I guess is a way to say that.
Yeah. What about like the other kind of like backstory writing? Mm-hmm. Did you think about, are you like, one rumor is that you are potentially married to Jenny?
There is definitely a connection between the two. I try and stay away from terms like married because there are cats. I mean, there are people dressed as cats, but they are cats at the end of the day. So the idea of married in the animal world doesn't exist. So
fair, totally yeah. fair.
But so that's not
the way the written rumor mill writes it out. It's like these two are together. They're married. This is somebody's adopted cat, like son. There's a lot of like very human-ish writing into the rumor mill. So that's very fair. Okay, so but maybe you're just together. Are you together?
Yeah, of course. There's definitely a connection. There's definitely a sensual connection or a familiarity because they've known each other for so long and they're watching all the kids. And, you know, I'm sure they grew up together and knew each other, all that stuff. But with any like cats relationships, I always try and go back to like the feralness and the animality of everything because that's what kind of drew me to the show in the first place. That unspoken like weirdness.
Yeah, you know, even as I look through some of the other rumors of like you're one of them is Rumpel Teaser's uncle. It's like, well, yeah, you're probably the uncle of everybody because they're probably all
everyone's got a little origin.
Yeah, everyone's got me in some capacity. And the other one is that one of them is your adopted son, which that one really threw me. That rumor threw me. It's Corpocat. Is that how you pronounce it? I always pronounce it.
Corcopat.
Corcopat.
Yeah.
When I read that rumor, I was like, adopted son just seems so weird, but it is on the rumor mill of that. Okay. That's one of the relationships. Yeah, and I never understood that.
The year that I did the show, there weren't as many cats as like the full company of cats. So we didn't have a Corcopat. So I never got to experience that rumor.
You didn't get to adopt him.
I didn't get the chance. I would have taken him in though.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple things in your song. Cause I've asked this question to a couple other Skimbles and I've gotten okay answers as in like people have tried to convince me where I'm wrong, but I want to go through what I witnessed or what I felt I saw versus what I now know is probably not reality. But at one point in the song, it looks like you're changing.
Yes.
What is that? Talk me through what's happening there.
That is, I assume, what is that part? It was very pleasant when he found his little den, that part. So that part is just showing the cats, the kittens, because it's a teaching moment. The kittens have never seen the railroad, or they're just meeting Uncle Skimble for the first time. He's telling the story. He's showing them what the cabin looks like and making fun of the humans at the same time. Like, can you believe they did this and they need all this? And like, this is how they change and stuff like that. So there is a naked moment, especially turning around and covers himself up for a second and then fixes it. But there is like a naked human moment that doesn't happen.
When I saw that the first time, I was like, why is he dropping his pants in front of a bunch of kittens? And so I kind of get it, but it definitely does not feel that way. And so it feels like, oh, I'm going to take my pants down. But I guess maybe it's because my amateur, like just fan is not like putting the lyrics together to the action. I was just like, what is he doing? So, okay. I can get that. There's a random sneeze.
Yes.
What's that?
What is that? Crank to shut the window if you sneeze is part of the pantomime of that story moment. I think it's just before the naked moment too, that he's pantomiming opening the window of the train car. And one of the kittens just has a reaction that's just in time. Just happens to be perfect. Like, but yeah, moment. Exactly.
And the other one that I still have not, this one I still don't have, feel like I have a clear answer on.
Sure.
Which is, it looks like you hand something to old Deuteronomy. And I'm basing this off the 1998 movie. So maybe this wasn't actually in your choreography. It could have been different. But it looks like you hand him a gift. And it's something about handing him a mice or a mouse or something in there.
Oh, yes. That's towards the end of the story moment where he sees a mouse on the floor and he stomps on it. And he grabs it off the floor. He throws an invisible mouse to Deuteronomy. It's like, it is a pantomime moment as well. But Deuteronomy's just kind of, is that the moment you're talking about?
Yeah. So why Deuteronomy? Like, why give it to him?
Just homage, because he's the leader of the tribe and he's giving him this moment to teach the children. So throwing it to him is like, this is our boss, and he's just playing along and catching it as well to continue the joy of the moment, because just before that was Gus, which in our tour we did Gus and Growl Tiger, which is kind of it's a sad moment at the end because Gus walks off and we don't know what happens to him. So Skimble kind of brings it all back, and it's kind of just bringing joy back into the junkyard.
I read that as a bribe. I thought you were trying to, trying to get into the Heaviset Lair. Like,
oh,
Harold, Deuteronomy, you want, I know you want this mouse.
Well, I mean, you play to the king, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, see what you can do. Like, this is my turn. I'm going to.
I never thought of it that way. I always thought of it as a joke. But was, no, you're absolutely right. It is a total bribe.
I'm bribing the, if I'm you, I'm bribing the decision maker. What about for just in general, do you think Skimble actually believes there's even a chance for the Heaviset Lair, or is he still just trying to keep stuff in order?
That year, when I say that year, I mean like the night the show takes place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I don't think he thinks he's in contention that year. I think he's just kind of keeping everything going. And the reason he gets his spotlight moment is because no one's been chosen yet. The ritual that was supposed to happen didn't happen. And so everybody's kind of left like, huh? What do we do with this? And Skimble is used by Deuteronomy as a teachable moment to throw him a bone a little bit in terms of keeping everything going, keeping everything moving. But I don't think he thinks he's in contention that year. I think he still has a couple more years on him.
So that's interesting. So maybe I've interpreted this differently. So you're saying that when we get to Skimble's song, it's because the ball ended and the decision has been made. And so it's just like, we need to figure something else out to kill some time until you make a decision. And we're going to use our uncle to go tell us a story and teach him and teach a lesson. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, that is what I'm saying.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the whole ritual of the ball, we're all there to do the Jellicle ball, to do the ritual, to make the choice, you know, say goodbye, go home. And that doesn't happen. It happens every year. And the reason the show happens on – the reason we watch this show, this performance, the reason why this story tonight's being told is because this is the year it didn't happen. So when – Grizabelle comes in, everything breaks apart, it doesn't happen, people are left confused. What do we do? It didn't happen. What do we do? And Deuteronomy realizes that he needs to bring everybody back because the tribe is kind of shattered, that we're not a unit. So
fascinating. I have not taken this angle. Let's keep going because I've got questions.
So the tribe is shattered. So he has to bring them all back together. So that's why he sings Moments of Happiness to talk about, we built up to this meaning and then the meaning didn't happen. So we're lost in the approach to it. And what do we do with that now? And it's something ineffable that we can't place or feel. And it's just jittery. So that's when he brings out Gus to talk to them about age and compassion and realizing just because someone's old and dingy, doesn't mean they don't have a story to tell, even if it's a sad story. And then bringing someone in who is someone everybody knows and loves, but you might not know that well, and can learn a little bit more about him, why he's such a stickler, why he's so detail-oriented, why he might be a little pushy, but he's always got your back. So that's kind of why he brings Skimble, is to understand that kind of message as well.
So I'm fascinated by this.
Sure.
And because let me tell you a little bit about how I interpreted this, and then I want to go into a little bit more about what you're telling me now.
Okay.
I have always thought that the Jellicle ball is part of the whole experience, but really everybody is going to make their case. It's all about, like, I'm going to go in and sing my story to make my case on why I'm there. And, you know, you could kind of debate a little bit about Tugger doesn't really care. He just wants to go make his case because it's just a spotlight. And you could kind of make those arguments, but that Jenny's making her case, that Tugger makes his case, and you're making your case. So I actually never thought that the ball ends and that this is a unique, like, year. Mm-hmm. And Gus is going up to sing his part to say, this is why I should go. And then you go and you say, yeah, this is fun, but this is why I should go still.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of saying that this is such a unique year because we got to the point we were supposed to make a decision and old Deuteronomy did not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, Grizabelle comes back, she ruins it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're act two, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're coming back from intermission. Is that what he's pondering? I guess, is that old Deuteronomy's pondering what he's going to do on during intermission sitting
absolutely
on stage?
Because it's like, even saying act one, act two, it is, that's not a thing for us as the humans watching it. Yes, lights come up and we all get a drink. But for the story of the cats, it's the whole evening. That's why he stays on stage and you see him sitting and pondering. Because he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know where to take the tribe from this, because maybe this has never happened to him either, or he's never experienced this also where choice wasn't made and it's on him to figure it out.
I love this because every time I talk to anybody about this show, I get just a different version, and mm-hmm. which is fascinating to me that this show can be interpreted that many ways.
Agreed.
So I like this because this dramatically changes the way you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because now Gus is not an opportunity. I guess Gus can't be the Jellicle choice because
We don't know that. That's the thing. He never. Where you're saying like they audition and are pleading their case?
No, I'd say in your angle, you're saying the ball ends because Grizabelle kind of ruins it before he gets a chance to make his choice, or maybe. So I guess my question to you would be is, in this scenario, who do you think his choice was going to be?
That's a good question. I was trying to think of the answer to that before we talked today, and I still couldn't land on anything. I think the choice maybe might have been Gus. But I really don't. I really don't know the answer to that. It's a tough one. It's a very tough one.
I think. It's so interesting. I think you, if he's going down a path, and you know, really at this point, the choice is at that stage would be Gus, Jenny, and maybe McCavity. Like you're going to pick one of the older cats, and so. Your thought is old Deuteronomy is ready to make the decision, is up to make the decision. And then all of a sudden Grizabelle comes in and he goes, oh no, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
In that scenario, my only kind of question or flaw is what is Gus doesn't give a reason why he should go.
No.
So I guess how would he have made the decision by that point?
I don't know. I think Gus is maybe okay with not going. Maybe like he lived the fullest life that he could live. And you know, when you live the fullest life to come back to another one that might not be the same, someone might be okay with that. So that's maybe why he's okay with not being picked. And in terms of Grizabella, That choice didn't come until later. I think he chooses Grizabella to make a point. And in terms of who he would have actually picked, I mean, maybe there is something to it, showing off like Jenny and who else in the beginning? Well, no, even Jenny's the only one who kind of showcases herself because she does Gumby Cat, and then every other number is Tugger's just interrupting to be a jerk.
Yeah,
that I don't even see that as auditioning. Yeah.
And then there's Mungo Jerry and Ripple Teaser, and they're not really auditioning.
Breaking it up anyway.
Yeah. So this also dramatically changes the McCavity fight scene now. Because now maybe he's kidnapping old Deuteronomy because he thought he was the choice and was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And old Deuteronomy choked and didn't make the decision when he was supposed to.
Yes.
And now he's tinkering and McCavity's fuming back there while mm-hmm. Gus and Skimbo are doing their whole thing, and that's why he kidnaps and we get that scene.
And that feeds into like the movie storyline with it where he's like stealing people so he can be the only choice.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought that was an interesting way to interpret that character, that he's not just mad at the Jellicles because they're the Jellicles and they're stupid and I don't like them. He's hurt and he wants to be back in that, and he thinks he deserves to be a part of that, and that kind of justifies that fighting for it or even interrupting everything in the first place.
I love this because I've not examined the show from this lens, and it's always fun when it's different because now I'm like everything's turning. Like, okay, what else happens?
Yeah,
so you've got McCavity's song.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have Mephistopheles, but that's mm-hmm. that would just be the end of the McCavity fight. It's like, oh, I brought him back. Here, I'm going to do a little showstopper. And then at that point, old Deuteronomy's had enough time to make his decision and says, I'm going to teach a lesson and give Grizabella the choice, even mm-hmm. though it's out of the ordinary. Is this like a asterisk decision? It feels like it's a, you know, this Jellicle ball is like the Super Bowls were with a shortened season or something. It's like you need an asterisk around here saying this isn't a normal Jellicle choice. Like, did she really win?
Maybe, but that's where it's up to interpretation as well, I think. And Yeah, it definitely maybe needs a little asterisk around it, but if you examine it enough, because when I talk to people about the show, I go on and on about the show, debating people and all this kind of stuff. But what I find most of the time discussing it with people is people come from it like a very human lens, that they're here to do the, even that the humans are voyeurs in this situation. Like, the humans aren't supposed to be there. So the interpretation of the humans, of the events that are going on, are through human eyes, not through cat eyes. So we don't always see the relationships. We don't always understand what the connections are between them. So
what's the biggest argument you usually get into with people? Like, what's the biggest conflicting piece that they don't understand?
That they're not supposed to be there. that the humans, it's not just buying a ticket and sitting down to see the cats put on the show. It's an avant-garde piece of musical theater. It's a spectacle that you come in upon this space and you're interacting with animals. Yes, they're people dressed as animals, but they are animals. So putting the human side to some of the characters, even though, yes, there would be influence from their outside lives and stuff like that, Skimble being on a train and being dressed up and stuff like that. Like, humans, like my cat's right here, she takes on some of my behaviors as well. So I could see that being interpreted, but it's always from a cat's point of view, not a human's point of view. I'd say that's the biggest debate I get in with people.
Yeah. That one I agree with, is that this is a, you're just lucky to be witnessing the ball, mm-hmm. and we're just there. It's not a performance for you.
Yeah.
I think it is interesting, 'cause when I saw it the first time, I kind of almost took it as a, I definitely took it as a performance, as in who's going to give me the best performance, and Old Deuteronomy as the judge. But every show that's like that on TV, you know, those versions of that, there's an America voting capacity to it as well. So I was like, oh, maybe we're just like the live audience, and we have a say or don't have a say, or we're going to have a say later on.
Yeah.
Or maybe a different Jellicle year. But I definitely do feel that, like, it's a, you know, they talk to you at the end. They mm-hmm. do kind of like, they address you. But for the most part, it is just like almost a little bit of ignorance of like, yeah, fine, you can watch.
Yeah.
So I'm with you there. I'm still on the fence on if I think the ball. So I really, it is very interesting that the ball should always end with the decision. And this is the year that tradition was broken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The ritual didn't happen.
Hmm.
It was build up to the meaning, and then we didn't get it.
But you get little memory.
You do, but I think that's what plants the seed for him to choose her later, whether it's a choice of her as making a point, because the bigger issue is whether the Jellicle tribe will continue or just fall apart. So picking her, that he saw this very private moment, and that when she comes back, everybody sees this private moment in front of, and they have the same reaction. That brings everyone back together. I think that's the key to him choosing her, is all the other cats got to see what he saw, when before they were just shunning her and being bougie. You know?
Yeah. Well, he's a cult leader. So at the end of the day, he probably wants to bring them back because he wants to keep his power. And
absolutely.
He's got to make a decision.
Yes.
And he felt like he messed up. You know? Yeah. He felt like he messed up. I love it. I love it. It's just so different from any way I've ever thought about it. It's fun. It's fascinating. How much did 8-year-old you pick up of that?
Probably zero.
None.
I just saw dancing and leg warmers, and I was lights and sound, and I was very happy. And I saw a little bit of rock and roll, so I was all good.
Okay, that was my thing. I was like, wow, this looks really hard to do. I can't do that. I can't sing that. I was like, that's impressive. And then me being the person who likes to write and likes to to analyze plots, I was like, there's some challenges here. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear how many challenges there are, that I've recorded 40, 50 episodes. And this is the first time I've had anybody kind of really push that the Jellicle ball should have been the end, and that this was a mistake year. And this mm-hmm. is that, mm-hmm. and I love it. That's what I love about it. But that's also what I hate about it, because I want to write the story, and it's clear that no one has written the story. There's like just loose interpretations, and yes, every story has their own slight tweak on this thing. Let's do some rapid fire, getting to kind of like the million dollar question. One is, and you answered this for the 8-year-old you, which is you wanted to be Tugger. If you could play any cat, and you've played most of them, so I guess if you were going to get an opportunity, this is hard because you've played so many of them, but I usually ask, like, who would you want to play that you've never played? But
sure,
that's just like two people.
Tugger was always fun, but I always enjoyed playing Monk the most.
So Monk, that's my question. If you got to go on tomorrow, you would, that would be your answer.
I would want to be Monkastrap. Yes. It's just the because he always has this big open wide position, very making himself as big as he can. And guys who usually get hired as Monk, they're usually like 6 foot tall and above. And I'm like just under that. So I'm like just a little underwhelming. So I have to widen myself instead of making myself taller to give the full effect. But just like the strength of being that open and being that wide. And I always enjoyed doing his makeup very much. The plot makeup for that was always very, very fun and challenging. And just his costumes, the black and gray striations and all that, was just always my favorite one to wear. I felt very sexy in it. So
what about the inverse of that? Who was, if it's like, oh, I got to do him tomorrow?
Plato McCavity. Plato McCavity was always very hard.
What makes that one so difficult?
Just because he's a cat that's all over the place, that he starts as Plato as one of the Jellicles, that he's not, has nothing to do with McCavity. Mm-hmm. But he kind of lifts everybody and is in the background a lot, and then has to disappear to enact to be McCavity, which is a whole makeup change backstage. Like you do, I think three makeup changes as McCavity, that you scrape it all off your face, put it back on, scrape it all off, put it back on, scrape it all off, put it back on. And the big reveal where he's the fake Deuteronomy, where the right before the fight happens, is always hard because that coat is so huge. And it's this big, what we had was this big giant mask that was had a wig on the back, but had this like awful smelling plastic breath of all the cats that have ever worn it. Interior like latex hard plastic that you have to pull off, and then you start the dance like rapid fire, and then you're lifting everyone in the world, and then you electrocute yourself at the end, and and also the whole time, because the year I did it wasn't with the revival, that it was more of like a David Bowie Labyrinth kind of McCavity look, that it was Cat on Fire, that you had these big gloves with these huge long black nails that were sewn onto the ends of these gloves. So you're trying to lift people in unitards wearing these big long like dainty gloves with these big plastic nails at the end. So it's just all the obstacles in the world to make everything happen. It was never fun to play Plato McCavity for me.
It is kind of interesting that there's so many where there's multiple cats, because like we definitely need for the orgy, we need as many people as possible.
Of course.
But we can't have like just you just be Gus, or you can just be this. Like it's always like you got to be a couple because we need the numbers. So I'm always and then talking about the whole makeup change and costume change and everything is an experience.
Yes.
What's your favorite and least favorite cat, as in like character?
Least favorite, I would say probably, I would say Mungo Jerry, maybe.
Ooh, why?
I just think he's a dick. I just think he's a bit of a jerk. I don't know. Just something about him rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, you can't describe it.
Yeah.
That's okay. What about favorite? I also love that you started with least favorite, because everyone is like, yeah, I love this person, then let me think about who I hate. You're just like, no.
Nah. It's hard to hate.
I don't like Mungo. All right. Let me figure out who I like best.
Favorite in terms of like who I like to play, or who I just like?
Just like.
Oh, like Tugger. I'm still gonna stay Tugger. It's always gonna
eight
be
year old you still happy.
Yeah.
What about your favorite song in the show?
Favorite like jam out song would be McCavity, is always a really fun one to like be in the shower and do that. But favorite song that touches my heart is always Moments of Happiness.
Okay.
It's like, if you listen to the poetry of it, and especially like the way I look at it, it's just a very haunting song, and it kind of hits you in the gut with achieving that like ineffableness of what just happened, this inexplicable feeling that everyone's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, McCavity's been my answer to that. And wasn't when I first saw it. Like the first saw it was Mungo Jerry and Ripple Teaser, because that one just got stuck in my head the most.
Not Skimble?
No, I've said this a couple of times, so I'll keep the story short, but I got blinded by the light the first time, like when they pointed out into the crowd.
Oh, the train?
The train light hit me.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
I was like, no, I don't like this. So I think, honestly, I think a lot of my writing on Skimbo, like the creepy young one, was, I think this, it's subconscious. I'm just like, still not a fan of this guy who blinded me for a half a second. Although it wasn't him, but that song.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a fun character to analyze because there's a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
My new favorite question I've asked the last couple of people is, which cat do you think would be thriving in 2021?
Ooh. Probably Mungo Jerry and Ripple Teaser, because they would probably be good with like Bitcoin and all that kind of stuff. No. I think they would learn the internet by then.
They're not the Klepto Cats or the crypto cats.
They moved to dark web and they're doing just fine.
That's great. What did they start their own? You think they're starting their own crypto?
Oh, sure. Jellicle coins for Jellicle cats.
Yeah, Jellicoin.
Jellicoin, yeah.
That's what we're gonna start, right? It's, you know, maybe it'll take off like Doge.
Let's go.
I love it. That's a great answer. I mean, that's what I like about this. I've heard a bunch of various ones, and there's nobody said the same thing.
Awesome.
And for all various different reasons, and they all make sense. So I like that. Jellicoin is going to take off. It's going to, you know, it's going to go to a dollar, to the moon.
Let's go.
to the moon. There you go. To the moon. Yeah. To the heaviside layer. Okay. So my $1 million question. And I'm now very curious, because I think you interpret the show so differently that you're probably going to say that Chrisabelle is the right choice. But I want to hear your defense for it, if it's her. And if not, who do you think should be the choice?
I'm going to stick with my choice that for this night, Chrisabelle is the right choice for the longevity of the tribe, for bringing everyone back together, for teaching vulnerability, because the Jellicles are jerks in the beginning. Everyone's not nice to each other. So they need to learn empathy for their tribe members, for their elders, for new kittens, for even people on the outskirts of the world that need help. I think that's the most important message, is to be welcoming and opening and compassionate. In terms of my choice for who it would have been at the end of the actual ball, I'm gonna stick with Ineffable on that, because it's kind of nice to not know. I think that it works in my favor a little bit.
Yeah, that's the great way to not have to answer the question. Yeah, you know, we don't know. It's better if we don't know.
Yeah,
I'm still a little fascinated by that, because it depends on how you answer. I think the most it depends on how you interpret the show.
Mm.
Which is what gets fun, is because I think if you look at it from just purely most worthy, then you can argue redemption for Isabella and she comes back. But if you're going to argue redemption, I think you could argue that for McCavity.
Mm.
If you want to argue who seems the most worthy because they've lived the fullest life and deserves being reborn, it's probably Gus.
Okay, yeah.
If you look at it like a show of who gave the best performance, Then it opens up a lot of, like, it's very subjective.
Yeah, agree.
And so it's either, is America voting? Is it the crowd voting? Is it old Deuteronomy voting?
Uh-huh.
What does that look like? And that's always been my take, is it's the X factor. So I paired Tugger and Mephistopheles and made them a joint boy band, kind of like One Direction. And they go together.
Yeah.
But I know that's a very, very narrow interpretation of the show. And that's why it's fun, because if I'm like now looking at your lens, when the ball ends, I don't think I'm even considering Gus,
mm-hmm.
because he hasn't given me a reason. He's just like, I would have already made that choice. Why would I use him again to kind of come back after? Mm-hmm. Which I also wouldn't consider Skimble or Mephistopheles or anybody else. Mm-hmm. So I think that leaves you a pretty narrow choice. And that would, I argue, would probably be Jenny.
Yeah.
Because she came out, she showed what she's got, and the ball ends, and she's still kind of like the oldest, most worthy choice, mm-hmm. at that point.
Mm-hmm. She's doing her community service. She's teaching Beatles tap dance and tatting and everything. You know, she's a role model. You know,
and her old friend comes in and ruins it.
No,
it's fine. It's a show where we've determined a cat is sexually abused and raped. Like, we can curse on the show. Like, it's there.
Sorry, I got excited.
So I am blown away. It's a different way to think about it. And now I'm going to be debating, like, all right, well, and that angle, what's going on here, what's happening here? And that's why I think they're super fans. I go see it multiple times because they can pick up different things and catch different stuff like that.
That's, and see different interpretations too. That's what's kind of nice, handing it over to everyone, because I learned the show from Richard Stafford, who set our tour. And you know, he's even said, like, so many people have played these roles, like, everything's kind of been done, so it's hard to find new things. And you know, people go to the same things because, you know, they are what they are. But when someone finds something different, that's what's always fun, to bring people back.
Crazy place. 40 years later.
Right, it's the anniversary today.
Oh, during the recording. I love it when we're recording. So how can we stay in touch, find you on social media, keep up with everything you're working on?
Sure. I still teach. I dance after Cats. I dance with a company called Streb Extreme Action. I'm retired from the company now. I danced there for 8 years, but I still teach there very frequently. I'm very involved in the space. So if you want to find them on Instagram, you can do at Streb Slam, STREBSLAM, for more information about them. They're just coming back from pandemic and about to start doing performances. Also, I'm involved with a group. My friend has a hair shop, but I'm involved with DJing and creating art over there and things like that. So if you want to check that out, she's a really, really awesome person doing really, really cool things right now. You can find her on Instagram at Hello Beautiful, just how it sounds, on Instagram.
Awesome. What about you? How do we stay in touch with you?
If you want to find me, if you want to follow me on the Instagram, my name is at Felix's Journey, Felix's_journey. And love I have it. A leopard hat on, probably. So you'll be able to find
me. Love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on, sharing a little bit about Skimble, and then sharing an incredible different interpretation of the show that now I'm going to be thinking about for way more hours than I want to admit.
Now and forever.
Now trying to break that version down.
Awesome. This was really fun. Thanks for bringing me on. Thanks for challenging me too, because I love debating this show.
So. I love it. Yeah. I mean, the one debate you said that's most common is something I was like, I agree with that one. So I'm glad we could debate other things.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.